Hello, Dr. Stacy Ellis here. You are joining me for Liberation, Healing Early Childhood, my 2-hour introduction. You are in part 1 of 4. I am new to this whole video taping, editing thing, so please be patient with me as we take this journey. And I do hope that you stick around from 1 through part 4 and get the full transmission of this work. So before we start, I want you to get settled wherever you're sitting, kind of ground out a little bit, maybe close your eyes. I want you to ask yourself, what am I needing? What am I wanting from the next 2 hours? What is my unique takeaway? How do I want to receive this information? Do I want to be really open, receptive, malleable, whatever it is? But I want you to call that in now. All right, and away we go. So I want to start with a personal example to tell you why I'm even making this offering to begin with. I was busy working a corporate job, managing a department for the Pacific Northwest of a medical corporation, and I found myself in heartbreak. Yeah, I think a lot of you can relate that, like, oh, gut-wrenching heartbreak. And we were in love. And they got clear that they had competing needs between what they needed and what the relationship needed. And my logical mind agreed that it was the best thing for us to break up. And my logical mind understood that this was a loving decision. And my logical mind understood that they were going to take care of themselves. But in that moment, I went from co-creating a future with someone to being a distraction. And in that moment, when they were getting out of my car and they kissed me one last time and said, I love you, I'll talk to you soon, I knew it wasn't going to be soon, if ever. And even though my logical mind made sense and understood what was happening, the rest of me went into shock, essentially. I felt dissociated from my body. I felt numb. And then 2 weeks later, I found myself having a 14-day migraine. And I'm someone that gets migraines like twice a year for a few hours. Went to a neurologist, another neurologist. They gave me a shot of Haldol, nothing. Went to a naturopath. They gave me all these vitamin IVs, nothing. They did all these blood tests. My veins were collapsing. Everything was normal. And I knew in my heart of hearts that I was having an emotional reaction. A physical, visceral, neurological reaction to the breakup that science wasn't explaining or Western medicine wasn't explaining. And what I realized was I was stuck in a trigger, that my history was coming back in that moment, because in that moment, my body was experiencing abandonment. And it triggered the abandonment of when my mom left our family. An abandonment in early childhood. And maybe from my mom's lifetime to my grandma's lifetime, I don't know. But it was really visceral and it was really strong. And so in that moment, I said, okay, wait a second. It doesn't matter that I understand this. It doesn't matter that I've made sense of it. It doesn't matter that it's the right choice. My mind and my body are doing different things here, and I can't get them on the same page. So I went down the rabbit hole. I asked a research question, like, what really is influencing how we make our decisions? Like, what is it really? Because if I know what that is, I can empower myself to make the best choices possible in my life. Because this wasn't the first time that someone that I was in a romantic relationship with left abruptly, right? what is this pattern? So when I talk about this incongruence, I have a relatable example that most of us have experienced at some point. Road rage, right? You're on the road, you're like, doo-doo-doo, someone cuts you off. You have this visceral reaction. Some of us go into fear or freeze. Some of us fight, like, how dare they, right? And then your mind starts working. The logical mind's like, okay, wait a second. Maybe they didn't see me, or maybe they're having a really bad day, or maybe they're just a jerk, or I don't want to let this ruin my day, right? So we make sense of it, but our body's still reacting. It'll continue to react for like 10 minutes or the rest of the day, right? It needs time to calm down. And so it doesn't matter how much you understand it up here, the body is going to process it different. And so we take it a bit further. We have become so cerebral in our society. So cerebral. Most of us are living from here up, and we don't even realize it in our personality. But what resides here? I like the term embodiment, right? You might hear this term from yogis or people that meditate. Embodiment. What the heck does that mean? Well, it's the role the body plays in shaping the mind. Yes, the body plays a role in shaping the mind. Okay? We're about to find out what that role is. I know I keep putting you off. Another example I have, when we're not paying attention to what's happening here down, I liken it to having a cup of water and taking ink. I know I'm going old school here, but starting to drip ink into the cup. What does it do? It dilutes it. It dilutes it. So when we're ignorant to what the rest of us is doing from the neck down, it diffuses our ability to see reality. It dilutes it. So most of us are walking around just seeing reality from one little perspective. And we're not actually embodied. Okay, so what am I talking about when I say the logical mind? The logical mind is our personality. It's our memories. We are able to remember the past and the future. Now, oftentimes we use that to work against ourselves, right? Oh gosh, that happened before, so what if it happens again? Or, oh gosh, what if this happens? We get ourselves really worked up. We can also experience desires and aspirations. But something very important to know about the logical mind is it does not experience life. So if you're living most of your life in your mind, you're not actually experiencing life. It can only logically process what's happening. It's a vehicle, it's a channel, but it's not actually living. It cannot feel. How many times have I had my patients say to me, I think I feel this, right? That's an oxymoron. It just interprets your experiences. It can understand, it can clarify, it can explain, but it's not actually in the experience of life. That's why a lot of us are walking around like robots. Do, 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 compute. It's like a little computer. Do, 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 boom. Do, 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 boom. So here's the thing. The logical mind does not start developing until between 7 and 11. This is Piaget's work. This is the concrete operational stage. I love his work. If you want to check it out, Piaget, that's all I'm going to say about that. But it starts between 7 and 11. So who's running the show before 7? That's what I want to know. And neuroscientists say that only 5% of our cognitive functioning is actually conscious. Okay. So what the heck is running 95% of our cognitive functioning if it's not our conscious mind? The subconscious, that's what it is. So the subconscious, you can also interchange the name of it as store conscious or root conscious. Those are other terms depending on what school you're dealing with. But it's concerning the part of the mind that's not fully aware, but it influences our actions and feelings. That's a little concerning. It's not fully aware, but it does influence. So the thing about the subconscious is it has a tendency to go back and experience the suffering of the past, the feelings of the past that are memorized in the neural pathways. So say you go to a movie, say we're watching like this drama, okay? And you're sitting there and you're believing the story. You're believing that it's real. There's real tears, there's real suffering. You're really experiencing it with them, but it's not happening right now. How many of us can go back and think about a challenging experience we've had, and then we have a visceral response to it? That's the subconscious reliving an experience through the nervous system. The other thing about the subconscious is it's fundamentally habitual. It likes habits. Whether they're good habits or bad habits, it's habitual. So it'll play these behavioral instinctual responses over and over and over, without our awareness, without the conscious mind knowing what's happening. So some of us have done a lot of work on ourselves. We're really well put together, but there's certain areas where we keep getting stuck. We keep having anger outbursts or being impulsive or just shutting down and dissociating or avoiding or fleeing the scene. It's like, why do I have that habit? It's a subconscious response to the past. It can also be called habit energy. So where is your habit energy? Is it in coming home and having a glass of wine every night to relax? Is it watching 2 hours of TV? Is it going to festival after festival, doing party drug after party drug? Like, what's your habit energy? What is your subconscious pulling you towards? And is it resonant with your highest version of self, or is it dissonant? Is it not a vibrational match with your best version of self? Something else to say about the subconscious is aspects of it is our physical body, our nervous system, our gut, where the truth lives, our heart center, or our feelings. And all of those make up the subconscious. Okay, so let's get to the important part, decision-making, right? Okay, the logical mind runs at 40 bits per second. For the computer geeks out there, how slow is that? Okay, it's very slow. It reminds me of my high school days where you'd sit there in anticipation waiting for the dial-up. It'd be like, and you're waiting for the ring to come on. Okay, I just dated myself. So the difference, the subconscious runs at 20 million bits per second in the decision-making process. So the subconscious has made the decision before the logical mind even recognizes that there's a decision to be made. That's substantial. And the research also shows that 90 to 95 of all adults, their decisions are made from the subconscious. So now this other part of ourselves becomes very important. Okay, so a little bit of biology. We have the Trinian brain, okay? Because I want you to understand what's where and how it works, okay? So we have the neocortex, okay? Up here. It's the logical mind, it's the human brain, it's rational, it's logical, it has our executive functioning, our ability to multitask, it's all there, okay? Then we have the limbic brain, which is part of the subconscious. It experiences our emotions, our fight, flight, freeze response. And then we have the brainstem, where we call it the reptilian brain, which is also part of the subconscious, and that's our instinctual survival mechanism, okay? Now, what the latest research shows is they're only connected, the logical mind, the neocortex, and the limbic brain with the brainstem are only connected by the vagus nerve, one nerve that goes through the heart up to the brain. Okay, and I'll talk more about that later. So I'm going to try to insert a picture of this into the PowerPoint right now. Okay. So we're going a little bit deeper. I want everyone to take a moment. And I want you to remember a fond, positive childhood memory. Now I realize some of you, this might be really hard because you don't have a lot of fond childhood memories. And for some of you, you might not have memories before the ages of 7. That's common too. But I want you to try your best. Maybe close your eyes. I want you to remember where you were, who you were with, any sensations, sounds, tastes, temperature. What did you feel like in that experience, in that positive childhood memory? What were you like as that child? If you could pinpoint any characteristics. Go ahead and open your eyes. Typical characteristics that people describe in their childlike nature are the creative, spontaneous and in the moment, honest, not logical, sometimes irrational, innocent, pure, curious, loving, forgiving. These are all characteristics of children, and who wouldn't want to feel this way? So looking at all the research, Western and Eastern, the best way we have found to describe the subconscious is as our inner child. And when you look at it that way, when was the last time you had a conversation with your inner child? Did you even know he or she was there? That part of us is typically rejected because we don't want to feel the emotions. So we stuff, we reject, we deny. We make this part of us bad and wrong. We make it the problem. And so typically, our inner child is wounded. Wounded from history, and then wounded again by our response. And it's waiting for us to re-engage with that part of ourselves. It's waiting for us to acknowledge and reconcile this relationship so we can become more whole and integrated and expressed in our lives, so that our subconscious can have a meaningful participation in our existence. So I'm going to read a few quotes to you about the inner child from different philosophers and teachers of our time. And I will be looking down a little bit to read these quotes. So the first one is by Thich Nhat Hanh. I think I butchered his name. I deeply apologize. He's an amazing teacher, philosopher, spiritual being on this planet right now. And he says, the wounded child is always there trying to get our attention. The child says, I'm here. I'm here. You can't avoid me. You can't run away from me. We want to end our suffering by sending the child to a deep place inside and staying far away as possible. But running away does not end the suffering. it only prolongs it. The Bible, Matthew 18:3, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never inherit the kingdom of heaven. John Bradshaw, a famous psychologist that does work with the inner child and family dynamics, he says, when people first made contact with their inner child, the experience was often overwhelming. Later, they said things like, I've been waiting all my life for someone to find me. It feels like homecoming, and my life has been transformed since I found my child. Jim Henson of the Muppets, the most sophisticated people I know, inside, they are all children. And Mr. Rogers, child in me is still, and sometimes not so still. So your subconscious inner child might be the key to the pattern that you're unable to stop, the place where you feel stuck, the place where you feel like you're in freeze. We can't skip steps. Okay. Now that we know we have a logical mind and an inner child, how do they interact? So we know that the logical adult processes information from the inner child, and it gives us the illusion that the logical mind is doing all the work and running our lives, right? We think we have it under control, and we thought it all through. But really, it's the inner child that's feeding the information. It's almost like it makes me think of the Wizard of Oz. It's like, who's behind the curtain? It's our inner child. So most of the time, the adult suppresses the inner child. It's like, I don't want to deal with you. Emotions, eh. Visceral feelings, eh. Listening to my body, eh. Right? We don't realize that we're suppressing this really important part of ourselves. So when we do that, when we ignore and push away our inner child, it causes more and more reactivity from the inner child or withdrawal, okay? And that looks like a lot of problems for adults. Those that are acting out, I'm like, why did I just go on that binge drinking? Or why did I just sleep with several people at once? It's the reactivity of the inner child. Withdrawal, wow, I feel really numb and detached from my life, or why am I avoiding that person, that situation? The inner child not being acknowledged and taken care of. So here's the thing. When our logical adult processor's ability to understand and cope with the world is overtaxed, the inner child takes over. I don't know about you, but having a 4 or 5 or 7-year-old run my life, it's probably going to be a little bit messy, or maybe it's going to be a grand adventure. I don't know. But we see this all the time. I'll be sitting with a patient and we call it regression, and they regress to a younger age. We can see it on Snapchat or, God, I don't even know what it's called. I don't do media. Twitter. Thank you. Twitter. Okay. So we even see our politicians and our famous people, and they just spew stuff out, and you're like, that sounds like a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old. It is, because that part of them has taken over, right? We can see it with our partners sometimes. All of a sudden, we're like, wow, how old are they right now? It's like two kids fighting in the sandbox, okay? An extreme example is someone that's schizophrenic. Their logical adult has completely checked out, and only their inner child's running the show. So can you imagine how terrified a 5-year-old would be fending for themselves out in the streets? Of course they'd be talking to themselves and not making sense and warping reality. And there's other ways and other perceptions about schizophrenic people, but this is one, okay? Okay. So that is part one. Part two, we're going to talk about programming. Guess what? You've been programmed. Yes, you have been programmed. And we're going to talk about it shortly.